Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Jack, and I am an alcoholic.
I'm Jack.
You can say that here, but don't say hi, Jack, at the airport. A poor attempt at humor, I know. Ralph this morning said there were some good speakers going to be coming, and he neglected to say that begins this afternoon. So, my mom is 96 years old, and she lives in her home. And I went by to see her on Wednesday before I left on Thursday to come down here. Told her I was going to be out of town. She wanted to know where I was going. And she said, "Are you speaking at one of them AA things?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I am." And she said, "You make sure you tell those people that you are not an alcoholic." My mom was married to my alcoholic father for 30 years. And so I think she has some foundational information for her opinion. And quite honestly, I'm thinking maybe I should listen to my mom. It's about time. I could have overreacted to this whole thing and here under false colors. Ralph did a great job of opening this thing up this morning, and I will try to follow in his stead. I need to tell you that, first of all, if you were here and you heard Ralph, you should not drink, okay? No, you shouldn't drink. I, on the other hand, love to drink. And I've never been fired from a job. I've never been arrested. I don't have a DWI or DUI or an alcohol-related offense. I've never been to a rehab. I've never been to a detox. My wife and I have been married for 45 years. I don't even have a good tattoo. And you're probably asking yourself, what are you doing in Alcoholics Anonymous? Because I don't have any of the prerequisites for getting here. Well, I do have one. And that is that when I drink, I get thirsty. And when I'm not drinking, I can't stay not drinking. And I want to thank the committee for allowing Dick to invite me to be here. I think it's really important that you know who's responsible for my being here, because if I say anything that offends you during the next 2.5 hours we're together, you take that up with Dick, because he's the one who's responsible. Now, if I happen to say something you approve of, by all means, see me after the meeting, because I could use those attaboys. The assigned topics for this morning are steps 4 and 5, but if this is like any other meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous I've ever attended, we can talk about whatever we want. In March of last year, I was in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I went to a meeting there with some local folks. And on the way home, they said, "You know, we have a rough cut of the Lois Wilson story at our house. Would you like to see it?" Bill and Bernadette invited me to their house to see a rough cut of the Lois Wilson story. I mean, who knew when I stopped drinking on April 7th, 1982, that was going to be part of my experience. Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful movie, as you all know, having seen it last night. And I was telling Bill before we began this morning that I am fully satisfied that God has created each and every one of us for a vital and important purpose. But clearly God has gifted Bill with a talent to convey to large audiences the essence of the message of hope found in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I commend Bill for his willingness to follow that prompting of God, because believe me, production of a movie, not one, but two movies, is not an easy task, and it was not an easy task to bring this movie to fruition. And Bill, I thank you very, very much. I'm going to touch a little bit on step three, just because I think the guy last night, he misread the program, and he wanted to talk about snails and nails or something, or seconds and inches, and missed the whole steps one and two deal. And I thought Ralph did a terrific job on that, and Ralph had enough time to get to step three. But I'd like to say a couple of words on behalf of step three, because I don't want it to be neglected. I mean, that's if you happen to be a step and somebody just glossed over you, just imagine how you'd feel. So I don't want to ignore step three here, and I think it's important that I touch on it, because in my case, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous bristling with antagonism towards things of God. And I'm a smart guy. Actually, I'm a very smart guy. I mean, if you want to know how smart I am, just see me after the meeting. But I explained to my sponsors, Ken and Bob, how smart I was. I mean, I thought Ken and Bob should be aware of who they're dealing with here. I am not an idiot. And I pointed out to Ken and to Bob all... Well, first you need to know I did spend 5 years in high school. Okay. But that could happen to anybody. I mean, if you'd have gone to my high school, you'd have probably spent 5 years there too. I mean, a series of bad breaks and misunderstandings, but nevertheless. And I explained to Ken about the community college graduation, the undergraduate degree at Maryland, the high school or the law school degree, that Juris Doctorate that I'm so proud of. And Ken explained to me that there are degrees on rectal thermometers. And you know what we do with them. Said at my office. I couldn't believe it. Now, granted, I was not a member of Alcoholics Anonymous at that time. Since joining Alcoholics Anonymous, I've heard that mentioned many times. And in fact, I've pointed it out to several people that I sponsor. You cannot be too dumb for this program, but you can be way too smart. So I think part of what we're about here this weekend is to try and talk about the commonality of our disease. That is no respecter of race or color or age or social standing or Yale or jail. It just doesn't matter. It's an equal opportunity destroyer. And if you hear nothing else this weekend, I mean, alcoholism just doesn't care. And when Ralph did that wonderful job of explaining the spiritual malady from which we suffer, I think most of your liquor stores here in Georgia and certainly around in the South generally have a neon sign somewhere around that says spirits. Says spirits. And Jung said spiritus versus spiritum. The malevolent spirit of alcoholism versus the benevolent spirit of a higher power who would like to use us and save us. Make no mistake, whether you believe it or not, or you like it or not, or you understand it or not, there is spiritual warfare underway, and it's underway right now. And for most of my life, I have worshipped at the altar of self-sufficiency. If it's going to get done, I'm going to do it. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. I don't know if it's just something in Western Maryland. I don't know. But I grew up understanding that if I just put my mind to it, that I could figure it out. That if I just thought the problem through, I could solve the problem. And that worked pretty well. And well, I'd say most all areas of my life, save one. There were occasions when I allowed myself to be negligently overserved. I bet that happened at Moochie's. I bet they overserve people there. Some bartenders just don't know when to stop serving. I'm going to put my watch up here, Dick. I really can't see it, and I don't pay any attention to it, but I just think it gives hope to the newcomer. So, so when you're a guy who worships at the altar of self-sufficiency, and you get struck sober, as I got struck sober. I mean, I was hospitalized, say my last drink was April the 7th. I was hospitalized like the 12th or 13th of April. I spent 7 weeks in intensive care. They released me. My kidneys had quit, my liver had quit, my pancreas had quit. I was full of gangrene, peritonitis, and my respiratory system quit. So that's not good for the home team. It's really not. But when they let me out, they said, do you drink? That's not a funny question. Well, I'm a lawyer. Well, I used to be a lawyer. At the time they asked me, I was a judge. I said, when I was a lawyer, I had to drink with clients. I had to drink with other lawyers. I had to drink with judges. Of course, now that I'm a judge, I got to drink with lawyers and I got to drink with judges. It's a matter of professional obligation. Of course I drink. How much do you drink? Not much. Why do you ask? And they said, well, I mean, your kidneys, the functions returned, your liver's, we don't know if it's permanently damaged or not, your pancreas isn't digesting itself anymore, and so we just think you should probably not drink for a while. Well, my last drink was on April the 7th, and this was May the 28th. So I said, well, I guess I can do that. And they said, no, Judge, you don't understand. This is Labor Day weekend, and it'll be June the 1st, and we want you to not drink for 1 year from June the 1st. Now, I know there are people in here already who have discerned the injustice that these doctors at Johns Hopkins Hospital were trying to foist upon me, because I'm getting no credit for my 7 weeks of continuous sobriety. And an argument broke out between those learned physicians and this knuckle-headed judge as to whether or not I'd drink next April the 7th or next June the 1st. And it was decided that I would not drink till April the 7th, and then if I thought any of the pain, suffering, and misery I just endured had anything at all to do with drinking, I would not drink till June the 1st. And with that, I walked out of the Johns Hopkins Hospital and into the most insane period of my life, not drinking and not changing. Not drinking. Not changing. Kind of like don't drink and go to meetings. I hope you folks here don't tell people that. We kill alcoholics when we tell them don't drink and go to meetings. They believe us. They think if they don't drink and go to meetings, it'll be okay. That isn't true. You know that's not true. If you think I got problems when drinking, wait till I stop drinking. Restless, irritable, and discontentment, a gross understatement in my case. More like pissed off in a spring-loaded position. That's me, buddy. Not drinking and not changing. What does an alcoholic do who doesn't drink and doesn't change? Ralph alluded to it. The alcoholic drinks. Slow suicide. Or in my case, he doesn't drink and picks up a gun and thinks that is the solution. Sheriff in our community shot himself to death in the basement of the courthouse. My office was on the top floor of the courthouse. It seemed to me that if I shot myself in my office on the top floor of the courthouse, that I would add symmetry to the building. That's not funny either. There are a lot of sick people here this weekend. So I'm not drinking and I'm not changing. And there's two guys in Hagerstown, Ken and Bob, and they know about alcoholism. They are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They are good members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're watching me die of untreated alcoholism. There are people in this room right now who are dying of untreated alcoholism. You think things are good because you're not drinking. Book says we're driven by 100 forms of self-delusion. If you're thinking not drinking's enough, write that down as one of those delusions. It's a lie we tell ourselves, and we believe it to be true, and we think not drinking is enough, and we have a book that says, no. There's more to quitting drinking than quitting drinking. And for those of us who have tried the not drinking and not changing, we know there's more to it than that if we don't die. Some of us do go back out and drink, and what a miracle it is that anybody makes it back. It's hard enough to get here the first time. We heard last night, I don't know how many millions of people, 40 million people suffer from alcoholism. We got 2 million in AA. There are a lot of folks out there who have never heard of us. You'd think, how could that be possible? Everybody knows about AA. Yeah, how about you? When did you find out about AA? Well, when you were 18 months old, somebody was slipping you a bottle saying, if this doesn't work for you, go to AA. We learn about it when we learn about it and not a moment before. So I don't know anything about AA. My father got sober in AA. He's a real alcoholic, as described in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. Ken and Bob come to me and they said, we thought maybe you'd like to read this book. It's called Alcoholics Anonymous. We call it the big book. We thought maybe you'd like to learn something about your dad's illness. Well, you know, I would kind of like to know a little something about my dad's illness. So I read that book, and as I said, my dad's in there, and he deserves to be in there. But what I had not counted on is I'm in there. Now, it's not everything in there about me, but just watching that movie last night, anybody experience feelings like were being expressed in that movie? Anybody look into the face of a loved one and say, I promise this time I really mean business. This time I'm serious. I had the privilege 3 weeks ago of being at Stepping Stones, and they got Lois's Bible there. And they got it out and opened it up, and there are the pledges written by Bill. The last one is 1931. And we know Bill got sober in 1934. So this day, December the 3rd, 1934, it is highly likely that our founder, Bill Wilson, was drunk. Somewhere in that movie with Ebbie Thatcher. I don't know the day Ebbie came by the house. But it was before December the 11th, because we know December the 11th is Bill's sober day. So back in 1934, right now, these are historic moments. My life hung by a thread in 1934, and I wasn't even a gleam in my father's eye. And they wrote that book in 1939, and they included stories about me in that book before I was born. And then I read that book, and I was dumbstruck that they would write about events that occurred in my life before I ever experienced those events. How could they know? And I went to Bill and Bob, Ken and Bob, my sponsors, and I was willing to concede to them that there was a possibility, a remote possibility, but a possibility nonetheless, that I may have contracted a very mild case of alcoholism. But we got it just in time. Not drinking, not changing. You know, Ken and Bob were counting on that. They were counting on that. That's all they needed was that little chink in the armor, and they started coming to my office. And every Friday, they came to my chambers, my judge's chambers, and they brought their big books and a brown bag lunch. And we sat at my conference table, and we ate our lunch, and we prayed the Serenity Prayer, and we read the big book. And they explained to me the importance of what we had read, and I explained to them as Jack sees it. And I'm sure that you can imagine the many high-level intellectual discussions that we had there around my table. Because I'm reading the book, but I'm not doing the deal. And I'm crazy. I'm crazy. I got a girlfriend. Got a backup girlfriend, in case the girlfriend finds out who I really am. I got a girlfriend for special occasions. My girlfriends object to my wife. My wife is not pleased that I have these girlfriends. She objects to them. We're separated. Separated three times when I was drinking. Separated three times when I was not drinking and not changing. I think that's pretty convincing evidence that drinking had nothing to do with any of those six separations. But alcoholism had everything to do with all six of those separations, and we had no idea. And so Bob and Ken are trying to get me to take action on the program of recovery, and I'm an intellectual kind of guy. I'm a thinker. I think we got some thinkers in here this morning. You know, we had this big party down in San Antonio, and when we were down there, they said, look, if you got any suggestions about how we can improve AA, we'd like you to give us a jingle up in New York, write us a letter, or send your suggestion along. So I did. I mean, you know, we got to, this pamphlet is called "Is AA for You?" And I wrote them with my suggestions of how to improve this pamphlet. This is good stuff. Have you ever decided to stop thinking for a week or so and only lasted for a couple of days? Do you wish people would mind their own business about your thinking and stop telling you what to do? Do you envy people who can think without getting into trouble? Have you had problems connected with thinking during the past year? Has your thinking caused trouble at home? Do you tell yourself that you can stop thinking anytime you want to, even though you keep thinking when you don't mean to? Have you missed days of week or school because of your thinking? Have you ever felt that your life would be better if you didn't think? Well, it resonates with a couple of people in here, so. The The big book says, and my experience confirms, that the problem for the alcoholic is not drinking. If my problem was drinking, Ralph's solution would be correct. Just say no and live happily ever after. I read that third chapter in the big book. I mean, that chapter is all about people who are sober. Everybody in that chapter is not drinking. Our friend Jim, the car salesman, well, I bet he was real thrilled working for a dealership he used to own. If anything, I'd go cross town and work for the competition. I'm not working for some car dealership that I used to own. But yeah, you come into work on Tuesday, for crying out loud. Don't you want to shout, Jim, where were you on Monday? I think that's what the boss wanted to know, so he had a few words with the boss. Nothing serious, mind you. Think I'll go to a tavern and a restaurant and a bar, and maybe I'll find a client there for a new car deal. Isn't that where you folks buy most of your cars and bars? Oh, yeah. Get some of the best models there. That guy is sober. Even up to and until the time he dropped the whiskey and the milk, he's sober. Something wrong with that boy's thinking. And don't you just love the jaywalker? I get an adrenaline rush just reading about the jaywalker. He is so exciting. Well, one of these days he's going to make it across the street. I just know he is. I know he is. Fractured skull, broken legs, broken back. Could happen to anyone. Problem for the alcoholic centers in the mind. Simply how I think is my problem. S-H-I-T. Simply how I think is my problem. Ken and Bob say, Jack, three frogs sitting on a log. One frog decides to jump off. How many frogs sitting on the log? Come on, Bob. Ken, what do you think? You're dealing with an idiot? Two. Jack, listen to the question. Three frogs sitting on a log. One frog decides to jump. How many frogs sitting on the log? Two. I'm very smart. You can't fool me with trick questions. Okay, Jack, we're going to try this one more time. You know, where do these guys go to sponsor school anyway? Who do they think they're dealing with? Three frogs sitting on the log. One frog decides to jump. How many frogs sitting on the log? Two. And as most of you here this morning know, the guy has only made a decision. There are three frogs sitting on the log. What is the object of step three? Is to get my little green ass into the air. To get me off the log. Now, my best thinking on this subject is I don't want to be a missionary in China, and I don't want to be selling Watchtower magazines down in the square. That's where my mind goes when you ask me to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand them. And Ken and Bob look at me like I got two heads. It's only a decision, Jack. If you make a decision to go to Ocean City, don't you have to get in your car and go across the Bay Bridge to get there? Well, yeah. Well, then you got to take some action on your decision. You don't even know if you're going to get to Ocean City. You're just going to Ocean City. We're just trying to get you to a place where you can live life successfully not drinking, because you see, I don't do sober well. I never learned how to live sober. I know the solution to sober. I go into the broad axe at the end of a tough day or a tough week and I say, John, give me two. I have had a rough week. I am stone cold sober. Alcohol is the solution to being sober. That sense of ease and comfort. But you see, I can't have that sense of ease and comfort because I'm not drinking and not changing. But I can't drink because if I drink, I'll be back in Johns Hopkins. My life is spinning out of control. The chaos, the voices in my head are just raging. They have these meetings. They meet. They decide stuff. They never invite me to participate. They just tell me stuff, and I go do it thinking that this time it'll be different, and it is different. It's worse, and it's stuff I'm doing when I'm not drinking. And so I don't have to become a missionary in China. I don't have to sell Watchtower magazines on the square. What I have to do is step out in faith. And as Ralph alluded to in his hour, I had faith in alcohol. I had faith in Jack Daniels. I had faith in J.T.S. Brown. My good friend Hiram Walker and his cousin Johnny. I had faith in alcohol. Wasn't too keen on gin. Had a bad gin experience. Used to have a love affair with a gin martini. I mean, where else can you get big olives like that? I mean, that's the purpose of the gin martini, to get your quotient of olives. Bad gin experience. Even to this day, it's tough for me to go into a pine forest. I mean, it's... But I had faith in alcohol. But I can't drink. And my life is just crazy. It's just crazy. They're paying me a lot of money to solve problems for other people, and I can't solve the simplest problem in my own life. My wife and I have three children. I said something last night, or maybe it was Thursday. I'm not proud of this. This is embarrassing and shameful, but there was a Christmas day when I was still drinking that I celebrated Christmas with my wife and our three children. We opened our presents, and I went upstairs and packed a bag and went out and got in the car and drove to Annapolis and picked up my girlfriend, and we drove to Florida and went to Disney World. And I abandoned my wife and children on Christmas Day. Not drinking. I think I was drinking then. Oh, good. I can blame it on the drinking. This is... I mean, anything can be excused when you're drinking. But, stuff like that. Swarmy, yucky stuff. I'm a quick study. You know, they got them things written on the wall. After that, making that decision, made a fearless and thorough moral inventory of ourselves. Some very wise person once wrote that an unexamined life is not worth living. But I'm not examining my life. Not examining my life, because you see, there's no problem necessarily in my life that can't be solved if you just behave yourself. If you just do what I tell you. You and I get along just fine. Because it's always been them. They have always been messing with me. You might have some of them in your life. You know who they are. Them. And you want me to make a fearless and thorough moral inventory of myself. And Bob said, it's not that big a deal, Jack. And I said, look, Bob, I said, I took a look at that thing. You got that chart. I don't even know where it is anymore. There it is, page 65. I said, you got that chart there, and the number one guy on my list is my alcoholic father. And then I go over there and I start listening to causes, and right then I get upset. And I ball the paper up and I quit. And Bob says, well, you're not doing it right, Jack. I said, I'm following the chart. He says, no. He says, you're reading left to right. The instructions say, make a list. Don't you have a law degree, Jack? Do you know what a list is? Do you know how to make a list? 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I can make a list. Make a list. Okay, so, you know, I make a list, and then I go back, and I do the causes from top to bottom, and then I do the effects my from top to bottom. And one Saturday afternoon, like a kid with a science project, I go over to Bob's house and on the door. And, of course, I don't call ahead. I mean, I know he'll be glad to see me. I'm sure he and the wife are just sitting there waiting for me to show up. Is this the Saturday you'll come? I don't know, honey. Little Johnny One Note, do, re, mi, 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 stuck on me, me, me. And so he opens the door, and Bob always has a smile on his face, and he did on this occasion. Well, Jack, what a surprise. And I like offer up my legal pad. What's this? My four-step inventory, Bob. Wow. You forgot the fourth column. Bob, there's no fourth column. Oh, yeah, there is, Jack. No, Bob. I followed the instructions explicitly. Like you said, I read them. Make a list. List the causes, list the effects my, I followed the outline in the book. There it is. Oh, Jack, you're wrong. Yeah, I may be in doubt sometimes, but I am never wrong. I'm paid a lot of money to be right. I said, Bob, if I had my big book here with me, I'd show you. He said, Just hold it a second, Jack. I happen to have one. And as he turned and walked away, I knew what that guy meant when he said, feeling none too smart. He was way too eager to get that big book. And he came back. And he opened it to page 65, and I said, see, there it is. Jack, turn the page. Let's go to 67, returning to our list again. My part in it. Yeah, my dad was an alcoholic. Yeah, he came to the biggest athletic event that I participated in drunk. Yes, he made a terrible scene. Yes, I was embarrassed and I was ashamed. Was I the best son that I could be? No. Did I steal from my father? Yes. Did I lie to my father? Yes. Then why am I complaining about my father when I was such a lousy son? Yeah, but, I mean, isn't that... That ought to be enshrined somewhere. That ought to be one of the mottos, one of the slogans. Let go and let God. Yeah, but. I had never, ever looked at my role in anything. It was always them. And if you asked me at the very beginning of my coming to AA, I mean, that list wasn't hard to make. I knew who I was pissed off at. I could write them down just like that, and I could make a list just like that of what they had done to me. Ooh, affects my, well, that took a little longer. I mean, this will not surprise you, I know, but I am a very sensitive person. and I don't suffer well. And so it affects me a lot what you do to me. And so for the first time in my life, the absolute very first time in my life, I could see my part in it. I was talking to somebody the other night. I have this, I got this out of the Washington Post, and I guess you have a Macy's down here. This Macy's in the Washington Post, it says 50 to 85% off. 50 to 85%. That means something that was selling last week for 100 bucks is 15 bucks this week. How does that make you feel if you bought it for 100 bucks? And you can get an extra 15% off if you use your Macy's card. 15% off of $15 would be like $2, more or less. So what cost $100 is now like $13. Aren't those Macy people generous? Selling $100 stuff for $13. Why are they doing that? Because they're friendly and they care about me? No. If they can't sell it to me for $13, they're going to sell it to the rag pickers for $3. They got to get rid of the inventory that doesn't work because they have a finite storage area to put the good stuff that's on its way. Right now, there are tractor trailers being prepared with stuff for the spring. And they got good stuff coming for the spring. And they got no place to put it. Macy's knows enough to clear out their shelves to make room for the good stuff that's coming. But not me. I'm chock-a-block full of stuff that doesn't work, but stuff that I have thought up all on my own. I may not be much, but I'm all I think about. And I've got really, really good ideas. Don't work, but they're really good. And I would be, I know you think you've got good ideas, but your ideas fail by comparison to my good ideas. My good idea, you keep asking Bob and Ken, how's that working out for you? It ain't working out yet. But I am pretty sure, based on what I know now from reading this book with you guys and having learned what I have learned, you know, that even a mild case of alcoholism will respond to my best thinking. So I'm hanging on to my ideas. They would walk away shaking their heads. And then one day Bob came and he gave me this tape. When we call, John, are you awake? Okay, John, good. We call this, he's a taper. He's a taper. He doesn't have a single tape with him. He's a CD-er. But they gave me a tape because that's how long ago it was. And it was this guy got thrown out of the Marine Corps, for God's sake, talking about dropping a rock. I'm going down for the third time. I'm hanging on to the rock. Blub, 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 blub. Jack, drop the rock. It's my rock. It's drowning you, Jack. It's drowning you. And I listened to what that guy was saying. And a hip, slick, cool guy like me could understand that hanging on to a rock while I'm drowning does not compute. Doesn't work. I have to let go of the rock. And so the book says, hey, take a look at fear. Take a look at fear. Oh, a corrosive thread running through the fabric of all of our lives caused more trouble than stealing. We ask ourselves, why did we have them? That's a nice thing about this book. They pose a question. And then if you're not an intellectual giant, they give you the answer. Why do I have these fears? Because self-reliance failed me. My entire adult life worshiping at the altar of self-sufficiency, and the very best I could do was get my bony butt in a chair in Alcoholics Anonymous. That was the best I could do. Turns out I'm full of fear. I'm fear-based. All my anger is underlies with fear. I came here a really, 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 really angry person. And the book says, you got to learn to live free of anger, Jack, or it'll kill you. Then in case I didn't get the point, they say it's fatal. And then to maybe add a little emphasis, it says some of us make the extreme sacrifice. I wonder what they mean by that. I mean, what? You know, Ralph was doing that, you know, okay, deny an alcoholic death, live by spiritual principles. These are not easy decisions to make. And I used to have guys stand in front of me and say, 90 days in a Washington County jail, or 3 AA meetings a week for 3 months. 90 days in jail, 3 AA meetings a week. I'll take jail. You know why we take jail? Because over at the Broad Axe, or over at Moochie's, when a guy goes to jail, he comes back. And a guy goes to AA, they disappear. They don't show up at the Broad Axe anymore. Well, occasionally, from time to time, one will come back. But by and large, I don't want to disappear. I understand that thinking. At least I know if I go to jail, I get to come back. I'll go to AA, I'll disappear, I'll be in China. So, now about sex. Could you dim the lights, John, and put on that film I brought? We usually get the biggest crowds in Hagerstown when we do a four-step part C. We're all interested. Although I had to make my four-step part C list on a post-it note. I know some of you used index cards. Those of you with yellow legal pads are just bragging, I know. The point is, of course, is that there is nothing more selfish and self-centered than a selfish, self-centered person like me involved in an intimate relationship with another human being. And since selfishness and self-centeredness is what's going to kill me, and we read in the obituaries in our newspapers of these people that we know who are alcoholic who die, and they never put in the obituary that Jim died of selfishness and self-centeredness. Now they'll say he was killed in a motorcycle accident, or he fell down a flight of steps, broke his neck, or his liver failed. But they don't put that Jim died of selfishness and self-centeredness. I was in Iowa and had been asked to talk about the four step a little bit. And, you know, in the big book, we inventory the three most common manifestations of self. And then the 12 and 12, we do the seven deadly sins. And even I recognize that seven is twice as many as three. I got that. But I attended Fellowship Hall in Hagerstown, and in Hagerstown at Fellowship Hall, they have written on the wall, 27 character defects to help you with your four-step inventory. And then we had another big group in Hagerstown called Serenity. And down at their group, they have 28 character defects listed to help you with your four-step inventory. And then I went to a retreat, and Father Roger had a list of character defects, and I compared that list with the 28 from Serenity, and I found 22 more character defects that Serenity didn't have. So I got a list of 50 character defects to help you with your four-step inventory. And then I mentioned to this group that I have heard that on the internet you can get a list of 100 character defects to assist you in your four-step inventory. And some guy three tables back whips out a list. He said, I just ran it off this morning. Okay, here's the question. 100 character defects to assist you with your four-step inventory, or the three most common manifestations of self. Jack, what is your choice to be? This is supposed to be very simple. Ken and Bob said, it's simple, Jack. We have one object, one purpose here. We want to chip away to start to remove the stuff that's standing between you and the sunlight of the Spirit. Well, I don't understand that. You don't have to understand it. I really don't want to do this. You don't have to want to do it. Oh, that's good. But you got to do it. Well, how about if I lie? That's okay. There's no wrong way to do a four-step, Jack, except not do it. I'd been not drinking and not changing for a long time. I hadn't been introduced to the concept of an inventory for a long time, but if you were to ask me how long was it before I did an inventory from my last drink, or if you were to say how long does it take to do a four-step, I would say that it takes maybe 5 years and 45 minutes. Five years of the thinking. Think. And 45 minutes of actually writing the stuff down, because it doesn't have to be a perfect fourth step. There's no grade here, Jack. You're not going to get an A or a B or a C. I'm looking at my time at the University of Maryland, and there was a point at the University of Maryland where it looked like I might or might not graduate, because my blood alcohol content and my grade point average were very close. And that's how they keep score in college. And I'm figuring I'm going to have to hand this inventory in, and I'm going to get some assessment or evaluation on it, and I want it to be one of the very best they've ever seen. Don't leave now. Well, I don't blame you. The problem with this is, of course, that I'm easily distracted. And I have a lot of short-term memory loss. All right, here's what we're going to do. My name's Jack. I'm an alcoholic. It doesn't have to be a perfect four-step inventory. It just needs to be an effort. I got to put some sweat equity into it. Making the decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God required no sweat equity, none whatsoever. And you ask yourself, well, now that I prayed the third step prayer, what do I do? Oh, here. The book, it says, next! I tell you, these clever writers of books. My big book's falling apart. most people whose big books are falling apart usually aren't. So just keep that in mind if you've got a pristine big book. This is a bullshit sifter. Looks like my big book. I take stuff I hear in meetings and I sift it through this book. And if it's in here, I can rely on it. How long do I have to be in AA before I take the steps? Well, you got to be here a year. If you want what we have, one, and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, two, you're ready to take certain steps. It's in here. I can rely on it. Being convinced of the ABCs, we're at step three. If I'm not convinced, it says, bend over, grab your ankles, and kiss your ass goodbye. Well, it doesn't say that exactly. What it says is that you might want to reread the book up to this point. And I think you got a manuscript out there, don't you? So you go out there and buy one of them original manuscripts and turn to the ABCs. It says, reread it or throw it away. Why do they say that? Because I'm an alcoholic, and if I don't change, you can kiss my ass goodbye. My best thinking ain't going to get the job done. It just ain't going to happen for a guy like me. Now, the book says, hey, if you can do a right about face, our hats are off to you. Not much chance of losing a hat here, I'll tell you that. Now, alcoholics, thank you for coming back. I appreciate it. I'm very insecure. Okay. So we do the inventory. Just to get a glimpse of what the driving forces in my life are. And just to begin the chipping away of the stuff that's been blocking me from the sunlight of the Spirit. 6 years ago, my wife and I bought a yellow Labrador Retriever puppy. And my wife says, what do you want to name her? And I said, I want to name her Sunlight of the Spirit. And she said, I'm all for that. Now, if I'd have wanted to name her some, you know, Zeus or something, that wouldn't have resonated with her. But Sunlight of the Spirit resonates for her because she's seen and experienced in her own life what the 12 steps of recovery will do to somebody or for somebody. You know, alcoholism is a disease in which one person drinks and everybody gets sick. And my wife got sick and my mom got sick and my sister got sick and our children got sick. My wife has lived by spiritual principles for a lot of years, kind of like Ralph's mom. And then she found Al-Anon, and her spiritual life has been enhanced a great deal by Al-Anon. And my mother, when she was 80, about 16 years ago, she opined as how possibly maybe she should go to Al-Anon. But it was a fleeting thought. She didn't go. There was a time when my mom and I ended every telephone conversation we ever had by hanging up on each other. And not too many years ago, she was telling me about a friend of hers whose son's an active alcoholic, and she said, you know what he did to her, Jack? I said, no, Mom, I don't know. They were talking on the phone, and he hung up on her. I said, really, Mom? She said, yes, I'm glad our relationship never got to that point. You see, I don't have to argue with my mom or remind her that our relationship was at that point, because it wasn't necessary for her to change. It was necessary for me to change. And so my mom hasn't changed, and my sister hasn't changed, and our relationships are really good today, because the power of a benevolent God working through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous have changed me. And now I've got to sit down and talk to God and to myself and another human being about the exact nature of my wrongs. That's a sucker's bet. I mean, I read ahead. If I were to attempt this, then very quickly you're going to want me to go apologize to them SOBs, and I'm not doing that either. So we can just skip five. I really, six and seven are two paragraphs. Maury, you should take about 15 minutes, I think. Or maybe that's Tom is talking on. Tom's talking on six or seven. He's probably back in the room preparing right now. Two paragraphs. How do you get a job like that, Dick? Eight sentences? I mean, at least we got to talk about pages full of stuff. Because they wrote this book for idiots like me, that's why. So, I'm going to have to tell somebody about this stuff. I can think of no reason whatsoever to do this. And the authors start a brand new chapter. You know, your favorite chapter, Into Thinking. Yeah. I've never done a fifth step, but if I ever did one, this is what I think might happen. Well, we're going to have a step meeting tonight. I haven't done the steps, but I'll tell you what I think about them, and then you can tell me what you think about them. And it's into action, baby. It's action. Okay, well, why should I do this step? I said to Bob, I said, I don't want it. That's okay, you don't have to want to. I don't like, you don't have to like, you just have to do it. Why do I have to do it? The best reason first, if I skip it, I'm toast. Bend over, grab your ankles, kiss your ass goodbye. That's it for me. Is there any other reason why I should do this? Well, if I would like to live long and happily in this world, that's another reason. But the best reason, I won't survive if I don't do it. Kind of like a maraschino cherry on top, I get to live long and happily in this world. You know, if you asked me this morning, and some of you did, how you doing this morning, Jack? I told you that I am happy, joyous, and free this morning, but I think it's going to get better. And I don't tell you that because I'm Pollyannish. I tell you that because that's my experience. The book says, and my experience confirms, that each and every one of you are promised a life that is happy, joyous, and free. And if you're here this morning and you're not happy, joyous, and free, let me suggest to you that you might want to get together with your sponsor. Find out what it is that you're doing that you're not supposed to be doing, or find out what it is that you're not doing that you're supposed to be doing. Because this isn't a something, sometime stuff. This is every time, 100%, double your money back guarantee. You, Jack, will live happy, joyous, and free if you do precisely what we did. And I can tell you without hesitation or reservation that there is absolutely nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous that has caused me any pain in the process of Alcoholics Anonymous. Nothing whatsoever. Any pain that I have experienced in Alcoholics Anonymous has been as a direct result of my resistance to Alcoholics Anonymous. My insistence of knowing better than the people who wrote their experience in this book. This book is not designed to convey knowledge. Self-knowledge will avail me nothing. This book is designed to convey an experience. I am instructed to do what the book says I must do. in order to achieve what the book says I will achieve. And Ken used to say, Jack, we get what we get because you do what you do. And if you want stuff you've never had, you're going to have to do stuff you've never done. Huh. Imagine that. I didn't want to do this stuff. I didn't want to do this stuff. I told Ken and Bob, I don't want to do this stuff. I told you what they said about rectal thermometers. That's a hurtful thing. But Ken and Bob knew I was dying of untreated alcoholism. I didn't know that. I'm not alcoholic. I'm not drinking. Alcoholics drink. I think everybody in here knows alcoholics drink. So the longer you don't drink, ergo non-alcoholic. You know. They were willing to risk hurting my feelings because they knew my feelings had been hurt before and they knew I'd get over that. And they were even willing to risk angering me because I'd been angry before. And I'd get over that. But I'm dying of untreated alcoholism. And I don't know that. They know that. And they know that if something doesn't change and doesn't change soon, there will be no coming back from that. See, alcoholism is a killer disease. I remember we were talking about Ray O'Keefe the other day. Ray O'Keefe's brother Billy died of a disease that he didn't have. Billy died of a disease he didn't have, and I suspect you probably know people who have died of a disease they denied they had. Bob and Ken knew that if I knew that they knew something that I didn't know, the mere fact that I knew that they knew something that I didn't know would make me angry just knowing that they knew something that I didn't know what it was that they knew that I didn't know. But they knew that I didn't know what it was that they knew, but they knew that at some time maybe I would come to know what it was that they knew that I didn't know. And if once I found out what it was that they knew that I didn't know, they felt that I wouldn't be angry knowing that they knew something I didn't know, because by that point I would know what they knew that I didn't know, and I would know that they knew it, and I would know that I needn't be angry knowing something that they knew that I didn't know, because now I know what it was that they knew that I didn't know, because in AA you know when you know that you know and not a moment before. Did you write that down? If you followed that, you're in the right place. Now, if you found that to be the least bit confusing, you're still in the right place. Just means you don't know. The adventure of Alcoholics Anonymous is just that. It is an adventure. It is designed for living that really works for alcoholics. As was said last night, in all of recorded history, there's never been a solution for people like you and me. Yes, there was that brief time that the Washingtonians were in existence, but this is the most sustained period of history in which there's been a solution for people like you and me. This time, 1934, chained to walls, living under bridges, dying between silk sheets. That was it for guys and gals like you and me. And here we are on a Saturday morning in a wonderful resort community, fully clothed and in our right minds. Okay, fully clothed. There might be a question mark on the other part. That's part of the reason why I'm here, is because I'm not all there. And that's okay. And there are some of those days that I go just a little crazy. But I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and I fellowship with my people. And the good news is we all don't go crazy on the same day. And we help one another and we support one another and we lift one another up and we share our experience. Not our opinions, we share our experience, strength, and hope. So that there's hope here for the hopeless. And if you're new here, I really, really implore you with every fiber of my being, please stay here. Stay here. There is nothing here designed to hurt the alcoholic. Stay here 45, 50 years, turns out you're not alcoholic, no problem. It'll be all right. You go out there by mistake, you'll die out there if you're alcoholic. And I'd much rather be sober in here by mistake than out there dead. It's just the way I feel about it. My life in here is wonderful. There's a part in the big book on page 164, I think it says, if I do this thing, if I align myself rightly with the God of my understanding, that great events will come to pass for me and countless others. Our wife and I have three children. I told you they were all harmed by my drinking and my not drinking and not changing. The one harmed the most was our middle child, our oldest son, Robert. Robert's married. He and his wife have a little girl, our granddaughter, and I was able to be there for the birth of the child. And then a year ago, February, they had a second child. They had a little boy, and my wife and I were able to be there for the birth of that little boy. And you know, they let you go back to where mom and the baby are. And I said to Robert, and I said, what have you named your son? And they said, you didn't tell him. And Robert said, well, I thought we'd tell him together. And they named that little boy Jack. And our book says the power of God goes deep. I didn't say that. Our book says that. Oh, five? Okay. Five more hours, folks. I know today that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous because somebody prayed. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous because my wife prayed, our kids prayed, my sister prayed. My mom, who doesn't think I'm an alcoholic, she prayed. She thinks I'm crazy. So she asked that God would please send somebody to help her son. If you're alcoholic and you're here this morning, you're here because somebody prayed. Maybe a lot of somebody's prayed. Now you may not like that, you may not believe that either, and quite frankly, I don't care. Because it's just the truth. And that's the biggest problem with the truth. The truth is. The truth just is. No matter what I think about it, no matter what you think about it, the truth just is. Now here's something I think we can get our arms around without any hesitation or argument or a dispute. I think everybody here would agree that this group assembled here at this moment have never been assembled together before in the history of the world. And we're never going to be assembled together again. Never. And our book says there is one that has all power, that one is God. May you find him now. Right here, right now. He's been here all morning. The God of my understanding is a gentleman. He goes where he's invited. And we invited him here this morning. We started by inviting him here this morning. I started my morning by offering myself to God, to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I better step back because stuff's going to happen. You know, take away my difficulties. Yeah, man, I'm all in favor of that. So the victory over them will bear witness of those that I would help. Same prayer that I've always helped. Same prayer, but different motive. Help somebody else. In our eight-step material, which somebody will be referencing later on, it says that my purpose is to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and to my fellow man. Bill Wilson did not call Ebby. Ebby called Bill. Dr. Bob did not call Bill. Bill called Dr. Bob. You called anybody today? You know there's somebody that you could call. Because that's our charge, to help somebody else to know the good news that there is hope here for the alcoholic. My name's Jack. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April the 7th, 1982. As our friend Ed was used to saying, I love each and every one of you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Thanks for letting me share.